Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Patricia Pearson, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, how was your day today?
Well, a little bit like yours. As you mentioned, we have a wonderful guest coming up right after the first break, Patricia Pearson. And I did want to mention to everybody, as you know, all of our shows are archived on our website, and we were the recipients of a website crash a few weeks ago. And when we came back online, much to our dismay, a great deal of data had to be rebuilt. And one of those, unfortunately, were the radio archives. So the archives from March of this year on to the present date are still missing. We're working hard on getting those back up. One of our volunteers is taking on that project. So bear with us. Please have some patience, and the show should be back up soon. We appreciate you listening. I know that we usually talk about something current, or I see there's an article on your desk. So,
and I do get a chance to read the newspaper while I'm shoveling one meal down my throat or another. But this was an interesting story. There was a cement truck had crashed into a school bus 2 years ago. And this article is about the trial for the driver of the cement truck who killed the driver of the school bus. And there's nobody else, I believe, was injured except for the school bus driver. But the oldest son of this school bus driver was before the judge during this hearing. And he said that his four-year-old brother, who obviously was 2 years old at the time of this crash, his four-year-old brother can't understand that he won't see his father again. If you read the next paragraph, though, there's a direct quote from this older brother who says, and I quote, "He still believes he's alive, and it's really hard to explain to him that he's dead," end of quote. So, you know, of course, I read it differently than probably the average person that's reading this newspaper. Say, oh, you know, of course it's hard to accept when somebody dies. But we're talking about a two-year-old who lost his father. And, of course, if he were seeing his father, which we know young children do, young children don't have the filters we have, and they can, and there's been many reports where they do see the deceased people. So if he's seeing them, of course he's not going to give up on the fact that he's alive and he's still around.
Right. So there's two distinct explanations there. One, it's just, you know, disbelief, like we all disbelieve when somebody has passed, or, as you say, the very good likelihood that you can't convince him otherwise because he's seeing visions of his father.
And right. But I think in a two-year-old, the other explanation doesn't apply.
Right.
Because with two-year-olds, if you remove something, it no longer exists.
Right.
Even if it's a block or a Lego or whatever it is, once you remove it from them, it no longer exists. So that's my article.
Yeah. I wanted to run something by you since we didn't have a chance to talk about it off the air. We can talk about it on the air.
Oh.
That is, I was thinking recently because I was actually on the AARP website, you know, retired people. And many of the things that we do as a foundation are focused around grief. You know, we have grief retreats. We have, you know, lectures and demonstrations and so forth. But baby boomers, of which I am one, are now starting to question their own mortality. So that there's a huge number of people, you know, more than half the people in this country right now, who are getting to that age where they're starting to question what happens after we die. And perhaps the information that we and others provide about survival of consciousness would be helpful. You know, maybe we should be gearing some seminars and lectures, and you know, towards that market. I mean, is that something that you think people would attend and be interested in, and would it be of help to them?
I think definitely people who would be informed about it happening would attend. I think that already a large portion of the members of Forever Family Foundation are those people who are seeking what happens to themselves when they die. You got to remember, not everybody comes to us because they've had a loss.
Right. A lot of people are simply curious.
Curious, or their own fear. Fear drives everything. And the one thing I think we learn from a spiritual standpoint is that we have to let go of the fear. So that's quite interesting to me.
Yeah, fear is can be overwhelming. We have such a, you know, a great fear of being extinguished forever. And I would think that some of the information that we do provide in these grief retreats and these lectures and demonstrations would apply to the simply curious. You know, if nothing else, it's going to open minds to, wait a second, maybe I'm not going to be extinguished forever. Maybe I will continue. And furthermore, maybe when I continue, what I'm doing here is going to affect what I'm doing over there.
That would be the greatest message that they could learn.
Yeah. So it's something that, now I don't know whether organizations, you know, such as AARP or others, you know, are open to that. You know, you're fighting, a lot of people have some deep-rooted religious beliefs, and they think of these in terms of what they're, you know, taught and
right.
practice in their religion. So, but this would be information that would be totally non-sectarian point of view and no strings attached. This
right.
is simply what the evidence shows, and this is what, you know, opened up minds to the real possibility that when they die, their mind, their consciousness, their spirit, whatever, their soul, whatever you want to call it, you know, will continue on. And that's pretty much something that our next guest is going to be also talking about in her book. So I would urge you all to stay with us, and we are going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to have our guest Patricia Pearson join us, and we're going to be talking about the unseen world. So stay with us.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707. Many people, just like you, hope that we continue to another existence after we die. It's a nice thought, but could it really be true? The answer is yes. There is an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that tells us this is so. On July 29th, come hear medical doctor and university professor Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti as he shares a visual presentation of the life after death evidence at Long Island University in Brookville, New York. Dr. Parisetti, also a noted psychotherapist and bereavement specialist, and former humanitarian advisor to the United Nations, can show you how to turn simple hope into deep knowing. He will be joined in the second part of the evening by certified medium Laura Lynn Jackson, who will demonstrate spirit communication as further evidence of an afterlife. Advanced reservations are only $15 for members and $20 for non-members. For reservations and information, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
In, our guest tonight is Patricia Pearson. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they're on the web at winbridge.org. Bob?
And Patricia Pearson is a critically acclaimed journalist. Her work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, Business Week, and many other publications. She's a longtime member of USA Today's Op-Ed Board of Contributors, and she's the author of 5 critically acclaimed and internationally published books, all challenging conventional wisdom about the human experience. She recently gave a TEDx talk entitled Why Ghosts Are Good for You, which points to research showing the importance of nearing-death awareness in helping people cope with grief. Her latest book is Opening Heaven's Door, Investigating Stories of Life, Death, and What Comes After. And you can follow Patricia on the web at pearsonpost.com. Welcome, Patricia.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. And I don't usually start off like this, but I must tell you that that I read your book. I love your book. I think you've done a masterful job of making the research clearer and at the same time, you know, causing the reader to ponder the implications of the research. And I appreciate your writing style. And it's like reading a nonfiction book that reads like fiction. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Much for saying so.
Yeah, you're welcome. And now, the topic of your present book, In Opening Heaven's Door, is certainly a departure from other more conventional topics you explored. And I know that in your family history, maybe your ancestors had some different ways of knowing things. But did you ever imagine that you'd be writing such a book? I mean, before you had personal experiences, I mean, specifically the passing of your sister, Catherine?
No. I mean, it was completely, it took my whole life on a completely different course. I just I mean, I was always respectful of and interested in spiritual writing, but I never anticipated that these kinds of experiences were going to happen in my life, and neither did anyone in my family. You know, it was a big surprise to the whole extended family, and it set me on a journey to discover how many other people were having secretly, in a sense, these experiences and not talking about it, and that really was quite amazing to me.
Mm. I mean, it must have been a difficult task. I mean, you're an accomplished journalist who's used to doing investigations, and here you have something that you're writing about that you really knew in your heart. So, I mean, was it hard, you know, putting on your journalist hat and writing about these things?
Yeah, it was. I mean, in a sense, my curiosity is what leads me. And so in that sense, it wasn't hard because I was like thinking, all right, well, this happened to my sister. She had a vision the night that my father died. It was really vivid. It was very dramatic. Nothing like that had ever happened to her. So what does that mean? It has to mean something, quite apart from the fact that my father died that very night. You could even hive away that coincidence and say just this, the strangeness and vividness of her waking up and suddenly feeling this kind of spiritual energy in her bedroom and sensing a presence and feeling hands on the back of her head. Nothing like that had ever happened to her. So right away, that's just kind of my natural curiosity as a journalist, to explore that as an experience.
I was just going to ask if you tried to explain away these things as they were happening. I mean, did you tend to chalk them up to coincidence initially?
No, not at all, and nobody in my family did. And I think that when in the subsequent research I've done in talking to people, nobody does, which is so fascinating. It's like because you know the people that you love, and you know how they think, and you know how discerning they are. And if they come to you and they say this extraordinary thing happened, your first reflex is not to dismiss it, but actually to say, "Wow, that's so interesting. I wonder why that happened."
Mm.
And so I think there's this like real divide in our culture between people who are trying to kind of uphold the status quo, who would then say, you know, well, that must have been a coincidence or blah, blah, blah. And then within families, there's a completely different rhythm of experience, I think, and a real respect for each other's intelligence. And, when somebody comes to me that I love and trust and they say, this happened, I immediately want to engage in that. I don't want to dismiss it. And so even parts of my family, my brother, who, you know, had never thought about anything like this in his life and was totally skeptical, is completely open. We were all completely immediately open to it by Catherine's experience.
Mm. I can really relate to everything you said on a personal level, because I know even in my own life when things started happening that I didn't so-called believe in, and Fran was having all of these extraordinary experiences, even though I didn't believe in it, I accepted them because I knew she would never lie to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was... if you don't mind, you mentioned Catherine's passing, and I know that you were with her up until, you know, the end, and she spoke very little in the last 10 days of her life, but what was moving and significant is that, you describe her expressions and her demeanor. You know, she seemed very content. You described her as looking gorgeous and lit from within. I mean, where do you suppose the contentment came from?
Well, that was really the question that spurred me on into writing this book, because I knew my sister really well. We were very close. And she'd always been a very anxious person. So to see her at the end of her life, and it was her son's 17th birthday, actually, the day before she died, and she was aware of that. So to see her kind of attain this amazing kind of detachment and peacefulness, and it wasn't a resigned thing. It wasn't like she was lying there sort of resigned. Not at all. She was happy. and she was talking to somebody we couldn't see in a very flirtatious and fun kind of way, and she was complaining about her, quote, hapless flight attendants, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point she woke up and said to her boyfriend, I don't know how to leave, you know, as if it was just kind of this difficult sort of problem she'd never encountered before, as opposed to being annihilated by the end of life. And, you know, that was so gripping and extraordinary to me to watch. And so I really wanted to understand it. And part of what I wound up doing was going and interviewing people who'd had near-death experiences to ask them, in effect, what would somebody at the very end of their life as they're dying be encountering that would make them feel reassured, would make them feel safe that they could be experiencing it that way, in a peaceful and happy way. So that's really what propelled me to interview the people who'd had NDEs. And, of course, what they will say, which you're familiar with, is, you know, that they were being made aware of this incredibly loving and protective and sentient light that was drawing them forth and making them feel safe. So that really reassured me in terms of where my sister was going.
Yeah, you must have been really surprised when you started to get deep into the research, and then that the research validated the personal experiences that you've had. I mean, for instance, when Catherine said she didn't know how to leave, I'm sure that when you started looking into the research, you saw that a great number of people often talk about leaving or going on a trip. You know, so
yeah, that's right, and it's very common with hospice staff and physicians to notice that people talk in terms of metaphors of journey, and they never talk in terms of, I mean, I shouldn't say never, of course, because they probably sometimes do, but on the whole, there seems to be this conversation around, I need my shoes, or, you know, I need my passport, or can somebody please get me my rail tickets, or, so it's like they have this kind of deep knowledge that they're going somewhere, and where do they, you know, how do they draw in that knowledge? It's fascinating.
Mm. You know, many of us know so little about the dying process. You know, people tend to die, you know, in clinical settings and, you know, in hospitals and hospice, and often their loved ones don't get to spend a lot of time with them. But, I mean, you wrote about something that I never realized, that about half the people who die, at least in this country, enter a state of terminal restlessness, as you called it, you know, where they're agitated, they have anxiety, they have this flickering psychosis, and you know, I think sometimes people think that everybody goes, you know, they're very peaceful, and not realizing that there can be that agitation. But I guess my question for you is, do you think that though that 50% who enter this state of this terminal restlessness, do you think they're also greeted by these discarnate escorts? I mean, but they just aren't able to communicate what they're seeing?
I think that from what I understand from the research, it's almost as if they're prevented from sensing that encroaching sort of welcoming committee, if you want to put it that way. So what they found in some of the research is that the people who have disease process that really impairs their brain, for instance, or if they have psychosis as a result of kidney failure or liver failure, which is what I observed with my mother-in-law, for example, then they're actually unable to sense in the moment what other people sense in terms of deathbed visions and relatives at the end of the bed and so on, and perhaps that sense of an encroaching light and so on. And so then you just have to assume that at some point in the process of passing, where their mind begins to kind of disentangle from that damaged brain, that then they're able to encounter those experiences. That's the only way I can sort of interpret it.
Mm. Well, it makes sense, as, you know, the people seem to be at some point, you know, straddling two realms of existence. So as you move closer to one, I guess, as you get more freedom from the physical body, things get clearer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to make sense.
Yeah.
You also talk about terminal lucidity, and everybody may not be familiar with that. So would you mind just explaining what that is and whether or not you believe that it could possibly have spiritual implications?
Yeah, terminal lucidity is a relatively new term that's being applied to people who, for instance, they've had Alzheimer's for, you know, a couple of years, like at a really profound level where they haven't recognized their relatives or friends, can say barely anything and so on. And then in the last kind of 24 hours before they die, they become clear and they might sit up in bed and talk to you in a completely normal way. Or sometimes it actually takes the form of somebody who's been physically paralyzed in some fashion, and suddenly regains their movement and can actually reach toward you and hug you. Or in one case, it was an American doctor who was observing a patient who had really, really, really profoundly, aggressively spread brain cancer. He literally had nothing, workable brain tissue left. And yet, in the 24 hours before he died, he regained consciousness and talked to his family. So the implication of that is that somehow our mind is able to transcend the sort of infrastructure of the brain at that point, almost as if you would think of it as being, as we start to dissolve back into a kind of unified mind consciousness, a sort of the mystics used to call a unio mystica, a united consciousness. We're able to transcend the deficits of the physical brain. It's almost like thinking in terms of a television set that's going wacky, but the television set is just a delivery system for the HBO program that is not being generated by the TV set, but it's somewhere else. And then you whack the television set and you're able to see the show again. There's some sort of process in which we suddenly become able to be lucid again. It's really interesting, and there's not a lot of research on it so far.
No, and I think it's so extraordinary because medical science has absolutely no explanation for it, and they just chalk it up, as they do a lot of things, to the process hallucinations of a dying brain. But if you
there's
think of it,
a lot of talking up going on.
Yeah, but it really. I wish I know it's a very hard thing to conduct research for, but I would imagine we could learn a lot if we figure out some protocol for doing that. When you started getting into the non-local consciousness and examples of telepathy and the science, were you shocked or surprised when you read about the preponderance of evidence, like, from Radin's work and Rhine and the Pear Lab and the Global Consciousness Project? And, I mean, you have odds against chance in some cases of in the billions to one, and yet it's not readily accepted. Did that surprise or shock you?
No, it didn't. And you know why? Because my first book, which I wrote, was about violent women. And I was able to determine that even the FBI wouldn't admit that there were female serial killers at a time when it was clear and, like, blatantly obvious that there were female serial killers. And I'm really familiar at this point with the way that a society will kind of go blind to one piece of information that doesn't fit. And, I'm seeing it with this book, right, because my editor at the New York Times, for instance, it makes his head explode. He can't. They won't. New York media won't take it on. They just can't. It doesn't fit with the prevailing paradigm. So they just they just can't deal with it. So I was aware that that happens, and so in fact I was, to the contrary, I was really happy to see that there was so much actually really solid research. Telepathy, because it just makes sense in terms of what people say.
Yeah, and now you get to experience with the people who conducted all the research, what they went through. Just imagine their challenges.
Exactly.
It wasn't only editors, but it was professors.
National Academy of Sciences. yeah. has refused to release perfectly solid data on telepathy, for instance.
Yeah, it's really...
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you think we're making any progress, or...
It's a good question. I think that it's going to be a while yet, but I know that... That there is some movement. I think there is some, like, softening of that kind of assumption. Partly, I know that because of the number of people who've reached out to me since I published the book and just, you know, said, look, I've never told anyone this, but... And then, you know, they come from so many walks of life, and they really, there's a sense of desire to talk about it now and to stop being made to feel stupid and silly.
Yeah, we wholeheartedly agree because we find that you know, constantly if you open up the door and you have a safe environment where people don't have this fear of being judged or labeled, the experiences pour through. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a great relief, you know, when people can finally talk about it, you know, in that fashion. And I'm sure, as you mentioned, that you're going to continue to get a lot of people, you know, writing to you, hey, you know what happened to me, and what do you make of this?
Yeah, there's a real floodgate.
I guess it does come down to what you choose to believe. I had an opportunity to watch your TEDx talk, and at the end, you said something to the effect that, well, you know, until you prove to me that we are not robots, you know, I'll hold on to the sacred moments. So I guess that's the problem, that, you know, much of mainstream science, even though they have no idea of what consciousness is, they're so quick to dismiss anything that defies a materialistic explanation. And so, yeah, I get what you're saying, you know, that it's your choice, right?
Well, I mean, look at, like, you know, if you were, imagine if Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet, and the first response was, well, you realize that's just an endorphin cascade in adolescent brains.
Right? Right.
Like, maybe, but is that really the point of the whole experience? I mean, we need to be able to talk about these radically transformative and reassuring and beautiful experiences and not have it, you know, hit the wall.
Do you think that with that, we all had these capabilities of being able to communicate through these non-local means, but that somehow these abilities have become atrophied over the years due to non-use?
I think so, and I do think that, and for a couple of reasons. One is because there's a lot of research on the ability to cultivate them back. So they've done an interesting study on advanced meditators versus, you know, beginner meditators, and the advanced meditators have an ability to engage in, you know, in synesthesia, right?
Yep.
In the crossing of senses,
mm-hmm.
where you smell colors and you hear something that you see. It's like a very rare quality in the general population to be born with synesthesia.
Yes.
But meditators can actually cultivate it, so it's like a breaking down of the senses so that they can kind of go almost radioscopic in terms of their perception. And I also found that a couple of years ago I was working with the Cree in remote northern Ontario, like really far up, like, you know, an hour's flight up from Toronto into the boreal forest, and they have retained that ability to communicate non-locally across distance, which is really fascinating. So they use something called a shaking tent, and they can actually, it's almost like a walkie-talkie or a radio, and they can communicate with one another across, like, you know, 500 miles of forest.
And that must have been an incredible experience. We are talking with Patricia Pearson. She's the author of Opening Heaven's Door, Investigating Stories of Life, Death, and What Comes After. The one website you can go to is pearsonspost.com. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we have lots more to talk about with Patricia, so stay with us.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Many people, just like you, hope that we continue to another existence after we die. It's a nice thought, but could it really be true? The answer is yes. There is an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that tells us this is so. On July 29th, come hear medical doctor and university professor Dr. Piero Calvi-Parasetti as he shares a visual presentation of the life after death evidence at Long Island University in Brookville, New York. Dr. Parasetti, also a noted psychotherapist and bereavement specialist, and former humanitarian advisor to the United Nations, can show you how to turn simple hope into deep knowing. He will be joined in the second part of the evening by certified medium Laura Lynn Jackson, who will demonstrate spirit communication as further evidence of an afterlife. Advanced reservations are only $15 for members and $20 for non-members. For reservations and information, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Patricia Pearson. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at email at radio foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, it's time for a few foundation updates for our listeners. We want to remind everybody that they can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single penny. When you shop on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com, and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's one on every page of our new website, and if you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes in your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon, you ask? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation, again, without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com, sign up, it's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like the Apple Store or Big Dogs, J. Crew, Old Navy, and Petco. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. There are only a few seats left to our annual grief retreat the weekend of July 25th through 27th, where we are back at the wonderful guest house in Chester, Connecticut. We have also added on a day just for parents who have lost children. The details are all up on the website, and it's a very special weekend of a small group of like-minded people sharing a very special journey. So if you want to be a part of this, make your arrangements early. You do not want to miss out on this meaningful experience. And if you'd like to save money, we can arrange to get you into either a double or a triple with other attendees of the same gender. Reservations can be made on the event page on the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Also, please join us on July 29th at Long Island University, where Dr. Piero Calvi Parassetti will present The Afterlife, A Scientist's View, followed by a demonstration of spirit communication for those in attendance by Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. It's an evening you don't want to miss, and it's only $15 a seat. So make your reservations now. And lastly, the wait is over. Plan to get to Durham, North Carolina for the biggest and best afterlife conference ever. It's a convention of the top organizations that have been dedicated to the investigation of life beyond this physical life. From November 6th through the 11th, we have loads of special things planned, including a day at Rhine Research Center with a spoon bending party. So visit our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and make your reservations now. This will be a big one, and you don't want to miss out on all the pomp and circumstance. We are back to you, Bob.
Okay, and we're back with Patricia Pearson, the author of Opening Heaven's Door. Thanks for staying with us through that, Patricia. And I had a question. You write, devote some part of the book to the third man factor, which is pretty interesting reading. I don't imagine a lot of people are familiar with that. So tell us a little bit what is the third man factor.
Well, that's really interesting. And what happened was, because my sister had had this sensed presence experience in her bedroom the night my father died, I wanted to look into more about, you know, whether or in what conditions people had these sensed presence experiences. And what I found was that in addition to, like, the roughly 50% of the bereaved that had a sensed presence experience, it also happened in these other circumstances of people being in peril or sorrow. And so, for instance, the reason they call it the third man factor is because in places like Everest or crossing across the polar landscape, like Shackleton, Sir Ernest Shackleton in the early 19th century, or solo voyaging on the sea, or all kinds of experiences of extreme adventure have produced this experience of sensing that another party is accompanying you. So you think that you're in this terribly distressing situation, and then you begin to feel that somebody is with you and they're very supportive and they're very loving. And in some circumstances, they actually provide directional help that gets you out of the situation. So very concrete and specific direction that helps people get out of these, very extreme and awful situations. And all of this was understood originally as being something that happened only to these extreme adventures. So they didn't connect it in any way to any other part of human existence. So it was just like, well, it must have to do with sensory deprivation because we're in this landscape of white and, you know, we're in the poles and all, you know, so our brains are filling in these, you know, these ghostly presences and so on. But when you start to look at the pattern across human experience, you see that it actually is the same experience happening to people where the real core common thread is that they are frightened and alone. And so that I found extremely interesting. And of course, there would have been a time in human existence when we were totally comfortable calling that guardian angel. But now, you know, within the science paradigm, we can't call it that. So it becomes, you know, hallucination or whatever.
Well, in a sense, it's similar to, in one respect, to these deathbed visions, right? Because, you know, it's almost as if, you know, people are being escorted by guides again, you know, only that, you know, in third man factor cases, as you mentioned, there's some specific information that's given that helps people get out of the mess that they're in. So, I mean, do you think it in the same way that you might think of some of these other phenomena?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's really, you know, it may be very unsettling to us in terms of what we've kind of grown up understanding about how the world works, but the fact of the matter is that the people who come to accompany you when you're dying to make you feel less alone, to, you know, bring you across on your journey, you know, help you with your passport or your ticket or whatever, you know, what is the difference between that and people who, you know, Ernest Shackleton was going from, 100 kilometers across the, you know, Antarctic ice floe, and it wasn't just him, that was the thing, he had two companions with him, and they all sensed that presence, and in many of these situations, more than one person senses the presence accompanying them. And so really it begins to flow into really the same concept, which is that we are not alone and we're guided by these spiritual presences. And it's kind of hard to argue against when you see how prevalent it is. It's really remarkable, actually, how prevalent it is.
Mm. You had an interesting personal experience. You were reflecting about staying connected to your sister, and then suddenly a pen started rolling in front of you, and there wasn't any physical reason for it to be rolling. So you had a great quote that you put in the book. You thought, I'm so primed by my culture to disbelieve in the significance of the signaling pen that I picture my sister throwing up her hands and saying, how much more obvious can I get? And
yeah.
I laugh because I often think that. Do you think that people who reside in the spirit realm are often trying to get through to this dense existence, and there might be some degree of frustration when we're not open to it?
Yes, I do. I mean, I don't know how they would, you know, experience it as frustration. I can't.
it's
hard to answer where they are. But definitely, you know, and that's what I think, you know, what people don't understand, like skeptics and materialists, what they don't understand, I think, is that they think that we're being wishful and childlike, and we really want to think that, you know, the pen that's moving on the paper signifies that my sister is somewhere. But that's not necessarily at all what motivates people. It's the opposite. What motivates people is their love of the person who's died and their wish to honor them and to honor their continued existence. So if my sister is trying to get in touch with me and telling me she's there, how could I ignore that signal? It's a completely different emotional impulse, you know what I mean, than what the sort of kind of skeptical, eye-rolling media would suggest. It's how much we love them and how much we say to ourselves, how could I ignore them if they were trying to reach me?
Yeah, I personally, understand. And also, who's to say that this love is not a conduit in and of itself, you know, by the means by which these things can occur? It's energy.
I think it is a conduit.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's a current. It's a force, like electricity.
Hmm. I know we're winding down, but I do have it's a philosophical question for you. So you've researched all these things. You find that people in deep meditation, people had NDEs, deathbed visions, I mean, they all capture or catch a glimpse of another reality. So do you think that it could be by design that perhaps our purpose here in the physical is to become aware of these other realms of this life continuum? Maybe that's the meaning or the purpose of our lives.
I don't know. It's an interesting question. My sense would be that we forget where we come from, and we're meant to engage in some task of growth or discovery. And, you know, at some point we remember where we came from, so that it's not so much to spend our time becoming aware of where we went, as that it's almost like we have to lose sight of where we came from in order to accomplish what we're meant to accomplish. And then we can regain our sense of, I mean, one of the women that I interviewed, she said, you know, that when she went into the light, she felt like she'd been lost for centuries and she'd found her way home. And to me, that suggested that there's some necessary amnesia in being born into this world. And then we're only allowed to sort of remember where we're coming from when we're finished, whatever growth we have to engage in. I have no idea what that implies in terms of the spiritual universe. I don't know what doctrine that fits. But that's certainly, you know, what I've heard.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly all find out soon enough. Right. Well, it's been a pleasure. We have been talking with Patricia Pearson, and I'm telling you, if you want to read a really good book, Opening Heaven's Door, Investigating Stories of Life, Death, and What Comes After, visit Patricia's website at pearsonspost.com. Patricia, thanks so much for being with us, and we look forward to your next adventure and your next book.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen LaFlada, Wendy Lippo, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Phil McPhee, Gina Dina Donato, Bobby Allison, Doug Berry, Brian from Chico, California, Barbara Ehrlichman, Lauren, Ann Hutchinson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Scandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marianne Pierzga, Julie B., Christina Di Donato, Barbara Patillo, David Hates, Riedo Springer, Mark Barron, Vicki Steffi, Tim Donahue, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Rita Dwyer, Eddie Roll, Karen, Andrea, Nina, Diane G., and Karen. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.